Moscow launches strikes across Ukraine days after Russian forces retreated from Kherson.
I don't think the Ukrainian spirit has been broken in any way by today's attacks, but that's also not what Moscow is going after. They're hoping to inflict pain further on down the line. Whenever Ukrainian energy infrastructure is degraded to such the point that it can no longer keep its citizens warm.
And Republicans back Kevin McCarthy as Speaker ahead of a call on who controls the House. Plus, don't like your commute? We have some tips on how to make the most of it. It's Tuesday, November 15th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. A missile hit a Polish village near the Ukrainian border late Tuesday, according to senior officials in Latvia and Hungary. Two senior Polish officials said they were waiting for more clarity on what caused multiple explosions. Russia's Ministry of Defense said statements made by the Polish media and officials about missiles allegedly falling in the area were, quote, a deliberate provocation in order to escalate the situation. Western leaders have been concerned about Russia's war in Ukraine spilling over into a larger conflict, possibly involving a NATO member state. Russia launched a series of strikes across Ukraine Tuesday, hitting infrastructure and civilian buildings. We'll have more on that in just a few minutes. We're still awaiting an official call on whether Republicans have retaken control of the U.S. House of Representatives. The GOP is just one seat away from clinching the majority. Meanwhile, after a closed-door meeting today, House Republicans are backing Kevin McCarthy, the current House Minority Leader, in his bid for the speakership. McCarthy received 188 votes to be the speaker from his conference, according to people familiar with the matter. But he'll need 218 votes in a roll call in January. Our congressional reporter Natalie Andrews has more from Capitol Hill.
In the next few weeks, he's going to have to work to win people over. He has a great position to do so. And we saw Paul Ryan and Nancy Pelosi, the two previous House speakers, have to do this. They will meet with members. They'll ask them what committee spots are they interested in. They will see how they can flip their vote from a no to a yes.
You can follow all the latest midterm updates on WSJ.com. In Georgia, a judge has permanently blocked enforcement of the state's ban on most abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy. Judge Robert McBurney said the law was clearly unlawful when it first passed, and that if the state wants to impose an abortion ban, the legislature would need to revisit the issue and pass a new law. The law behind the ban was passed in 2019, but the ban only took effect in July, about a month after the Supreme Court overturned the decision that made abortion a constitutional right. FTX founder Sam Bankman-Fried is trying to raise fresh cash to plug an $8 billion shortfall. According to people familiar with the matter, he and a few of the exchange's remaining employees spent the weekend calling potential investors. Bankman-Fried is seeking the funding to repay individual traders and institutional clients who have been unable to withdraw their funds, according to the people. FTX filed for bankruptcy on Friday. The company's lawyers said in court filings late Monday that the bankruptcy could involve more than 1 million creditors. An activist investor is pushing Google parent Alphabet to aggressively cut costs. London-based hedge fund TCI Fund Management sent a letter to CEO Sundar Pichai suggesting cuts in long-term projects like self-driving car unit Waymo and said the company would be more efficient with fewer employees. TCI says it holds $6 billion of Alphabet's stock. The letter comes as layoffs have hit the tech industry in recent weeks, with Twitter, Facebook and Instagram parent Meta, and Amazon already having made significant reductions in their workforces. Alphabet declined to comment. The world's total population has hit 8 billion today, according to the United Nations. One driver of population growth? People are living longer. Globally, life expectancy reached 72.8 years in 2019, an increase of almost 9 years since 1990. Though it fell to 71 years in 2021 as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. The UN predicts the global population will peak at around 10.4 billion in the 2080s. The most populous regions are in Asia, with China and India each more than 1.4 billion strong. Coming up, a barrage of missile strikes across Ukraine, just days after Ukrainian forces celebrated the retreat of Russian forces from Kherson. More details after the break.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Russian forces launched dozens of missiles across Ukraine Tuesday, targeting the country's infrastructure and residential buildings in Kyiv, according to government officials. The assault followed Russian troops' retreat from the city of Kherson and came just hours after Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky addressed world leaders at a summit of the Group of 20 Nations, calling for justice for Russian war crimes. Joining me now with more details is Wall Street Journal foreign correspondent Thomas Grove. Hi, Thomas. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
So, Thomas, today's strikes across Ukraine come after significant victories for Ukrainian forces, including Russia's retreat from Kherson. What can you tell us about Russia's offensive today? What have we learned?
Well, what we've seen today is we've seen Moscow revert back to a strategy that it started on October 10th after it saw a number of defeats on the battlefield around Kharkiv region in the northeast. We saw Moscow basically turn towards trying to destroy Ukrainian energy infrastructure. And so we've seen lots of cruise missiles on power plants, electrical stations, and things like that, that basically is degrading Ukraine's ability to keep its citizens warm. One thing to note is the scale of today's attack on Kyiv and other cities. Zelensky himself said that 85 missiles had been directed at Ukraine, and I think the number has gone up since then. That would make it the biggest kind of single-day strike by the Russians on Ukraine and Ukrainian infrastructure since it started this strategy of trying to degrade Ukrainian energy infrastructure.
Earlier this week, we saw Ukrainian celebrations as forces and people moved back into Kherson after Russian forces retreated. What can you tell us about what they're discovering in the region?
Right now, what they're finding first and foremost are booby traps. They're finding mines, they're finding tripwires and things like that that are essentially designed to create as high a human toll as possible among the Ukrainian troops that are coming in. What we're going to see in terms of what Russian occupation looked like for the civilians who lived in Kherson, I think we've yet to see.
What does Russia's retreat from Kherson mean for the war in Ukraine overall and Russia's ability to keep fighting?
So basically, the troop movements that happened following Russia's pullout from Kherson will certainly benefit Moscow and benefit Russia's troops because they're going to have shorter supply lines. They're going to have a much more condensed force structure in the places that now matter to Russia. And so while Ukraine will continue trying to degrade supply routes and infrastructure and command and control centers that Russia has set up, Russia's defense lines will probably be a little bit tighter than they have been before. And I think part of the reason why they pulled out of Kherson is exactly that, because during winter, whenever the conditions are more difficult, you have to get more stuff to the front lines in terms of food, clothing. It just makes it easier. And they don't have to deliver across, you know, this huge bridge across the Dnipro River. So it does make that easier for them. But Ukraine has pretty much said that it's not going to stop. And so while some are hoping for a kind of winter pause in which both sides will regroup, it seems pretty clear that the Ukrainians will continue fighting and continue trying to hit whatever they can in the coming winter months.
And amid all this, there have been efforts to get Russia and Ukraine back to diplomacy. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky also set some conditions for ending the conflict. What can you tell us about his conditions?
I mean, they're very straightforward conditions. He wants to see the withdrawal of Russian forces from all of Ukraine. And I think in his speech today, that means absolutely Crimea. Crimea, of course, being the Black Sea Peninsula that was part of Ukraine up until 2014, whenever Russian troops invaded and basically annexed the territory. He wants to see reparations paid by Russia to Ukraine for the damage that it's done to infrastructure, to buildings, to bridges, roads, whatever you may have. Another part of the plan was that Russian military officers who have carried out war crimes would indeed be held responsible in something that he's called a special tribunal. And there's considerable skepticism that Russia would be willing to meet any of those conditions right now.
And we know that Western officials have been pushing for a diplomatic solution. We've reported that CIA Director William Burns met with his Russian counterpart in Turkey this week. What can you tell us about developments there?
We're seeing channels remaining open, and I think that's the best most of us could hope for right now. It seems like neither side is really willing to start putting anything to paper, making any kind of guarantees.
What can you tell us about sentiment in Ukraine coming off of these recent celebrations in Kherson to now seeing this widespread attack across the country?
People are still buoyed very much by the sights of Ukrainian soldiers entering Kherson. You know, from our correspondent who is on the ground there, it does seem like, first and foremost, people are just very happy to see the Ukrainian troops returning. So I don't think the Ukrainian spirit has been broken in any way by today's attacks, but that's also not what Moscow is going after. They're hoping to inflict pain further on down the line. Whenever Ukrainian energy infrastructure is degraded to such the point that it can no longer keep its citizens warm.
That's Wall Street Journal foreign correspondent Thomas Grove. Thomas, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
And finally, whether you're dealing with bumper-to-bumper traffic or sardine-packed trains, commuting can be a drag, especially as you feel time slipping through your fingertips. But Julia Lee Cunningham, a professor of management and organizations at the University of Michigan's Ross School of Business, says you can use your commute to set yourself up for a successful day ahead. Whether you're on a train, a bus, or locked behind the wheel, there are ways to use that time wisely.
I would just simulate the day. Okay, here are the big things that I will be doing, most important meetings or most important tasks, and then sort of picture it in your mind and think about, okay, how do I decide what's most important to me today to do? And then how do I get to work and resist the temptation to jump into emails and carve out that time to do the most important thing first?
You can hear more about how to make the most of your commute on this week's episode of the Wall Street Journal's As We Work podcast. And that's what's news for this Tuesday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for the Wall Street Journal.